Orleans.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Flaps in the shot. What a goal!
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast, part of the 90 Min Football Network. Joining me to talk about the 1-1 draw against Everton and the ongoings around Molineux, particularly what happened after the game. I'm joined with Stu, Luke and Tom. But most importantly, guys, and I'm going to throw it to Luke here, talk to me about Power Slap.
Yeah, well, I'm just watching it now. I can't even believe it's a legal sport. It's mad.
But you can't take your eyes off it, can you? That's the problem.
It's crazy. Like, I actually think it's going to get quite big. Well, Dana White's behind it, and he's frigging.
Remember in the late 90s, there was a thing called bum fights, where they paid tramps to fight each other.
Yeah.
And you want a bootleg CD video. It feels like it's the natural evolution of that.
Yeah. How do you think Fred, the ring rail tramp, would have got on in bum fights?
Oh, he was a soldier, wasn't he? So, I don't know. He seems more of a... He loved his plants and stuff that day, though.
He seemed always more of a lover than a fighter for me.
Yeah, yeah, true.
He calmed down a bit after that.
Yeah. Anyway, well, let's talk about football. or we could... You know what? Let's bring it slowly onto football. Let's not make the full jump. Which Wolves player would be the champion at Power Slaps?
Oh, Adama.
Yeah.
1,000%. There's no real... you know what? I'm going to go for Toti Gomez.
Actually, I reckon Costa would do well because I reckon he can take a slap.
Yeah.
He's the sort, like, you'd slap him and he'd just, like, start laughing in your face.
Yeah, that's true. Because I get it's a two-way street, isn't it? Because... The question is, could Adama take a slap better than Diego Costa?
No.
Nah.
No,
it's take a slap better than Costa.
Yeah, I feel he'd enjoy it.
It wouldn't rearrange his face any more than it already is.
As contests go, I feel like a Power Slaps competition would have been a more interesting one from the game yesterday, but there were quite a lot of undertones to the game, which I think...
Do you know who deserves a power slap?
Go on.
David Coote.
Yes.
He's got a face, he can power slap.
Great segue. I feel... Should we just start all fan cast with this?
Yeah. who deserves a power slap of the week?
Yeah.
David Coote.
That could be how they get around VAR issues. Yeah. And, you know, and like punishment for referees and players... You know, we shouldn't just discriminate against referees because we'll have all those little Twitter accounts go, ooh. No, players as well. And even, like, David Cook's a great example because there's that weird incident where he touched the ball after Neves won it back. It went to the Everton ended up getting the ball back. It could have just been solved nice and simply, not with a drop ball, but with a quick power slap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would be a decent rule to introduce.
Yeah, thank you. And
he would have gone down worse, more of a bitch than Paul Alcock did at Sheffield Wednesday years ago.
Oh, that was embarrassing, that was, wasn't it? Jesus Christ.
So bad. Let's talk about the game, because, I don't know, it was a weird one going into it, I think, because obviously... Our position secured. Everton's isn't. But I don't know, when I saw the lineup, I wasn't sure kind of how Wolves would approach the game to start with. Because Lopetegui's kind of hinted, you know, about giving different player starts and things like that. But realistically, did anyone expect this starting lineup with, you know, Collins coming in, a midfield pivot of Gomez, Neves, then a front four essentially of Sarabia, opponents, Wangan and Dalma.
don't even think most of the players expected that lineup.
No.
Never mind the fans. It was a strange one, especially sort of like a front two of Sarabia and Hwang. Like, I don't know, I just don't see how that works in any sort of format. It's really, really strange one. I mean, obviously, Neto Matinho left out of the squad completely. Another strange one. It'd be interesting to know what his thinking was behind that squad yesterday. You know, obviously, he's left people out for a reason. Is it because they're not in his plans at all for next season? I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, for me, that was a really, really strange lineup.
Everton's odds drastically shortened as soon as that team was announced as well. Did anyone notice that? That actually plummeted. Joe Nobody knew that that was a shit team by Wolves, basically. Just zero goals. Like, where are the goals in that team? So, you know, where we've always played shite with no striker this season. And just as soon as it was out, I think we all thought that it was an Everton win incoming, to be fair.
I mean, you look at at the time, and I said, well, the only kind of common sense is it's some kind of 4-2-3-1, and it never really was.
No.
Because you had Hwang as a central striker, which is mad enough. But then, like, Traore was on the left sometimes, and yeah, fluid front three or whatever, but it's them players who can't do it. I mean, I already had a 5 on Everton to win anyway, because I thought, well, of all the things, and he's the king returning. Last time he was here, he beat us 4-0 with Burnley, remember? So it'd be harsh. But I thought, oh, well, we're on the beach, as we've proved time and time again in the last few weeks. Everton, like you said, Rich, have got all to play for, and then that team line that comes in, you think, well, it's going to be one of these, then, is it? And I was pleasantly surprised, I suppose, when it wasn't.
Yeah, because it looked awkward on paper, but I mean, it helped, and I feel like it needs to sort of be stated. I didn't quite appreciate how crap Everton are. Just they are just not a good football team, and obviously, yeah, they're where they are on the table, but that is just a team who are just on its arse, in my opinion.
I think they're very, very fortunate that they're probably not going to get relegated this season. Very fortunate. I'm not quite sure why we were so insistent on trying to play quite direct when they've got probably two of the biggest centre-halves in the league. You know, and we were playing Sarabia and Hwang up front, who ain't the tallest. But yeah, I mean, I think Everton are lucky that there's only one game left now, because, like you said, Rich, they're really, really bad. Like, really bad. And I know, as much as Stu loves Dyche, but again, like, from a tactical or a coaching point of view, like, long term, what is the plan? Just to try and play horrible route one, lump it up to the big man style football for the rest of next season as well.
I mean, that's the point, though, ain't it? That it's not what is the plan. I mean, in a weird way, it'd be better for them to go in and start again, because this was the same last year. It was the same before that. This has been coming for years. And what are they going to do? They can't spend any money. So they are going to patch it up and go again next year and kind of stumble along until the new stadium's open. But then what they're going to do, they're still going to pay for it. And they're in some kind of weird scouse limbo that's never going to end, which is funny and for our point of view. I mean, in a weird way, having them and Forest stay up is guaranteed to keep them at the bottom of the league next year as well. But obviously, we're not going to be troubling there when August comes along. But you got two there who are going to be in the bottom six again next season, straight away, because what's going to change?
I mean, you're the financial expert, Stu.
Well,
how bad are Everton's finances? Like, are they close to point deduction territory?
I don't know if it's not happened already. I mean, we won't know what this season's like until next April, when the things come out. But from what they were saying, when they were like, oh, the Premier League's going to sanction them and everything, if that was anyone else, if that was Bournemouth with that level of debt, they'd have been done. They'd have been done already. But because it's Everton and one of the key marketing points of the league, and we all know what goes on, it looks as dodgy as anything how they've escaped so far. And it wouldn't surprise me if someone does put a bit of a legal challenge in, like Sheffield United did with the Tevez thing, because it looks... They said they'll investigate it. They're supposed to be under sanctions, yet they still spend money and they still lose a lot every year. It doesn't make any sense.
I think with Everton as well, they haven't really got any assets that are... Well, from a playing squad point of view, who's worth the money? Pickford, Calvert-Lewin maybe, but away from them too.
Anana's half decent. I think he'd fetch a bit of money. But yeah, you're right. They haven't got much at all, have they? But I think the thing is with that is like the City, the one that's been brought up with City, they're saying that might be 3 years before anything's actually come. It's going to be in courts for something like 3 years. And I mean, Everton have bounced around this for two or three already. And I don't know how they escaped it last time, like Stu said. If you read all the reports, obviously we only get fed certain things through the media and what have you, but it seems a bit of a joke that they're still in this sort of position where they're sort of getting away with it.
Well, you look at the Anthony Gordon money. Is that 40 million? They ain't spent that. No. So it's just been squirreled away to the... Oh, we'll write it. We'll be good. Well, you can have this little bit of money, but there's another... That's 10% of what we owe you all. And football credit has to be paid anyway, regardless. Mm-hmm. But where's it coming from? And yeah, I know they got done by the Usmanov thing with the Russia and whatever, but that was only the 30 million sponsorship of... Well, no, it was the right to have first dibs on the sponsorship, which sounds dodgy anyway. So the whole thing just stinks, and they should have been done already from like what Tom says, like what we've been told.
Yeah. They strike me just as a team who... Almost like Villa, just need to get relegated. They need that hard restart because, you say, they don't have lots of standout players who you could say, oh, they will improve another Premier League team.
Mm.
And it kind of just screams that it's just a club and a team that just has a really poor culture to them. And, you know, whether Sean Dyche is able just to kind of literally just change it over the summer and scrap a load of players and bring in new ones, I don't quite see it. I actually don't, I'm not on King D levels of Sean Dyche, nor do I think he's this, you know, footballing dinosaur, but it'll be a hell of a job to actually get them to turn around, because you say it's three seasons in a row essentially where they've been in the bottom five.
Mm.
So bad. But going to yesterday, obviously they had a few chances, don't get me wrong, and arguably they had better ones than Wolves, but they're just not a good football team.
As soon as Calvert-Lewin went off, they were absolutely dreadful. They had a bit when he was on, because like we said, you know, they were lumping it up to him and he was, you know, bringing a few people into play. I think he had a couple of headers first half that he should have probably done a bit better with. But then after that, I don't recall him having anything at all. And I don't want to skip ahead too much, but Dyche said after the game, oh, some games you win on tactics, some you win on ability. This was winning just by sheer grit and determination and just, you know, knocking at the door constantly. And I don't know what the hell game he was watching, because I didn't see him knocking on the door till about 5 minutes from the end. I couldn't believe there was no urgency at all. I think their fans were getting agitated with him as well. They were just stepping off and not doing anything whatsoever to try and get anything from that game.
You know, it's really interesting because I watched the game, but sort of when you look at the stats, it's weird because they did have a much higher XG than us. But I think you look at the hot zones of it, they were, you say, the Calvert-Lewin header, and I think Yerry Mina had one in the first half as well, which, you know, were both sort of 6 yard out headers, but beyond that, which I guess sort of tips it on a statistical level, yeah, it didn't really ever feel like Wolves were really being pressured. But we weren't the most fluid creative outlet that has ever existed. But that was a weird thing to watch. And it's been a while, I guess, since, you know, we've seen Wolves be that team who were just on the beach and have that level of freedom, I guess.
You say freedom. I mean, if you bring that graphic up again and you look at the shots.
Yeah.
When did the last time we had that many shots? And five on target, let alone. And it's only one at best. And that's out of four. So to have 13 shots, and they weren't just pot shots either. And you look at, obviously, a couple of the long ranges there for the audio people on the graphic. But the Sarabia one that went just wide of the post, the one that where Pedence, whatever the hell he was doing there, he had plenty of time to just take it down and slot it in rather than trying to volley it for no reason whatsoever. But them two, just off the top of my head, were standout ones. And you think, well, fair enough. We've been begging for this. We've been actually creating chances, and we did. But as per usual, we fucked them up.
Well, we did. I was going to say, yeah, yes, we did. But I guess for one chance, which we didn't quite fuck up, was Adama Traoré in what could potentially be his last home appearance for Wolves. Almost did the most Adama thing possible, where he runs 80 yards with the ball, beats five players, and then his shot doesn't go in. And like,
I mean, honestly, with Adama, he splits the fan base probably like no other player. But that run yesterday was just absolutely superb. What other player, probably in the league, can do that? I mean, just look how he progresses us up the pitch with his runs. I don't understand why people would be so happy to see him leave.
Well, Nunes did it after, but
yeah, he did. To be fair, there's a decent run from Nunes as well.
But I think that's the problem, though. We know he can do that. That is what he's good at. When he does anything else, like when he sliced it, his first cross of the game after 2 minutes, and it was straight into the same. Yeah. But like I've said over and over again with him, like when he went on that run, there was at no point was I excited because where's this going to end up? Because you know it's not going to go in. It's going to be straight at the keeper or ballooned over. So when it was a decent shot for a change, and it was a pretty good save, I was actually, that was the moment when I thought, and then obviously Quang put it in, but it's so far, few and far between with him. That's the problem. Like, we know he can do this. He could do this all game, every game, but he does it once a month at best. You think, just why? That's what you're good at. Just do it.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm a Traoré fan. I like him. I think we should keep him. But I do appreciate that he's inconsistent with it as well. I do think he gets slack on his crossing. I know that crossing the first 2 minutes was absolutely terrible. Yes, I know. But I think his crossing's a lot better than what people actually give him credit for. We could certainly do a lot worse. Well, we do, Sarabia, as a winger. So, you know... I'll bang the drum another 2 years for Adama. Even if then, you know, we just keep him as an asset, as a squad player, even if he doesn't start every week. But, you know, I actually think we'll struggle to replace him because he's so unique.
Then the closest you're going to get is Chiquinho, but again, Neto's never come back from what happened to him. That injury looks absolutely shocking compared to anything else that we've seen, even worse than Raul's in a way. But yeah,
so much football. Is he missed 12 months now, Chiquinho? Is he 12 months?
I was going to say, hasn't played any development squad football, has he?
No, I don't even think he's training on the grass yet, is he?
He was around in one of the videos last week. Bro, I can't remember if he was running or not. I just saw his happy little face. But. I mean, in a weird kind of flip reverse, I would say, like my argument with that I put on Twitter about Semedo, that you look at it the other way, we're signing a Premier League capable defender for free, who was before yesterday part of one of the best home defences in the country. So you can't moan about it, can you? And for the same argument, if you're signing Adama Traore for free, is that a bad idea? Probably not.
Is he worth 100 grand a week? Because that's what he's asking for. That's what he's asking for, isn't it? So
that's the problem. That's the debate. What's he worth? 760, 70? Whatever.
Yeah, that would be fair. I think that would be fair. But then from like Traore's point of view, you've got to look at sort of Jimenez for the last 2 years. And you'd be thinking, well, if he's getting paid 100 grand a week, regardless of what he's done in the past, because he ain't doing it no more, but, you know, this fella's getting paid 100 grand a week.
Oh, he was off those terms before the injury, though, wasn't he? And that's when he was 100 grand a week player, so it's hard. I get your point, but he wasn't offered those terms on Jimenez, who he is now. He was offered those terms on Jimenez pre-injury. But with Adam, he's going to get more money elsewhere. I think that's just going to be a fact, isn't it? Because when you're a free agent, you can pretty much ask for what you want, and you know you'll get it. I think he'll ask for more than what we're willing to pay him, to be honest. And I think he'll go.
I completely agree, Tom, and you're right, because a club's not going to have to fork out the transfer fee. I'd be curious to see what club's willing to spend that bit more on him. And I'm, because you're right, you have got someone who's, he has these flashes of quality, and it's whether like a Crystal Palace goes, because sort of fits the bill in terms of some of their you know, pacey attacking players, and go, oh well, we'll pay him 150 as a,
I'll tell you what, I would do,
semi replacement for Zaha.
I'd let Palace have him and I'd get Zaha at
that's 200 grand a week, that one.
Yeah. It's such a tricky one with Adama, and I think the fact that out of everything that happened at the weekend in terms of goodbyes, quote unquote, there wasn't anything really about Adama, was there?
I think it's still up in the air, ain't it? It's still very much.
It does feel it. It doesn't feel like the, you know, the chapter's been closed for me.
I think you know, you've got to put them, we'll probably put the players into three categories, sort of definitely going, 50-50 definitely staying, and Traore would fit into that middle category, maybe with, I don't know, would you put Ait Nouri in that category, the 50-50 maybe, Saar 50-50. So I think that's probably why. So obviously, because, you know, Jimenez definitely going, Moutinho definitely going, Johnny definitely going. That's why there's more sort of conversation around them, because we sort of know they're definitely going. Whereas the 50-50 ones, you know, because it is 50-50, that, you know, the conversation's not there really, is it? Because the focus is on the sort of.
So I sort of think for yesterday in particular, I think you've kind of got vote that the famous five of the end of the year players in Neves, Jimenez, Moutinho, Traore and Johnny. And you might almost felt like just out of process of elimination, there wasn't much focus on Traore, because we'll talk about Moutinho in particular in a bit, but Johnny wasn't in the squad at all. And maybe, you know, Lopetegui's gone, I've got my fullback in Brenner on the bench. Why would I, you know, I don't need to necessarily do it. Neves is your club captain for the year left on his contract. And every season, we kind of get the same spiel from him. And, you know, it kind of feels a bit more likely this time. And then Jimenez, which has kind of been bubbling under the surface in terms of his future for, 12 months now? And, you know, we had pretty big signs that he's likely to move on in the summer for me. So, you're right, we've kind of talked about everyone else. But yesterday, almost Adama's stuff fell by the wayside in a way, which I think was probably a good thing in a way. because that's far more interesting than other ones to sort of pick apart. But we'll talk about the end of the game in a little bit, because actually the goal itself, fair play for Huang for keeping up with him, because they both start pretty much on the same starting point on the edge of the box.
I thought he was excellent first half.
Mm.
Huang, he's kind of, that's the kind of player we thought he was going to be in the first place. When a bit of a terrier, he's got more skill than you realise he actually has done, and he's got an eye for goal, and he's there. Is that four goals now this season, and they've all been tap-ins? And you think, well, yeah, that's what we haven't got anything like that anymore.
It's what he's good at.
Yeah, just leave him alone, not expect the world of him. Just get him to do his thing, and he does it really well. I mean, he was proper knackered at the end, like, but he's going to be, because the shift he put in was superb. And I know what happened at the Newcastle game earlier at the start of the season, whatever, that kind of, it wasn't really his fault. It was everyone's frustration bubbling over, and it just happened to be him who cocked it up. But I think he's got some kind of redemption story this season of everyone else, because no one hates him anymore, which everyone has seemed to have turned on him at one point. And like people called him Huang and everything, and which wasn't really fair. But you look at him now, and I thought, yeah, fair play to you. You got that goal, and his overall performance, especially in the first half, was excellent yesterday.
I agree. Yeah. I thought it was really good. It says a lot that he's gone from being like everyone's first name out the door, as in from our forward players, to now probably one of the only ones that were worth keeping. Because I wouldn't shed a tear if any of those forward players left, apart from Cunha, probably. Obviously, he's not going to leave. But the rest of them, you know, I'm bothered, to be honest. Whereas Huang, you know, I actually think he's probably quite good to keep now, because, like I say, he's got a goal in him. He seems to be in the right spot so often. You know, and he works hard. I think he put himself about quite well. Like you said, the two massive centre-halves. And I felt he held his own. I really did. You know, it's not an easy gig that we've seen bigger strikers struggle against those centre-halves more than he did. He went quiet second half. But, you know, I think it was a really, really good 45 minutes from him.
I think there's certainly worse squad options to have than Huang. I mean, I was really critical of him at the start of the season, especially after the Newcastle game and the incident there. But like Stu said, he's chipping in with goals, and for me, he's not the worst option in the world. If you know, maybe you draw in a game and you know you need to chase a goal, 20 minutes left. You know, there's worse players to bring off the bench than Huang. So I think as a squad option, we could do a hell of a lot worse.
Yeah, you're completely right. He's I know it's a pretty good knack for a forward player to find themselves in good positions in the box.
Mm.
And you know, that's saying something considering most of our forward players don't particularly have that. And it's footballing basics, isn't it, to follow in a shot, especially if you've got a Adama Traore shooting.
And Pickford saving.
Yeah, it's always good. It's always a good chance it's going to bounce back out to you. But I know, for me, like, that stuff doesn't happen by accident. And, you know, you're right, like, most of his goals have been tap-ins for Wolves. But
I always believe
kind of leaving in terms of that fox in the box.
As long as the ball crosses the white line, it don't matter if it's from 35 yards or 3.5 yards. A goal is a goal. Like, just put the ball over the white line. And, you know, I think, like you guys have mentioned, it just shows that his positioning, his awareness in the box, his anticipation to read those situations. As a striker, they're key attributes to have.
Yeah. You know, when you consider half our players get aneurysms whenever the ball comes through the box, you know. As you know, a couple of comments on the old YouTube. Ed Marshall, Huang's redemption arc is Marvel comic levels, and also sort of follows up with he stays in between goalposts, and that's natural poach stuff, and he's right.
Yeah.
You know, Huang isn't a left wing forward. He isn't someone who, you know, can hug the touchline and do that. That's not his game. he works great in a front two, or he's when he's got players supporting him where he can kind of find those little gaps in the and pockets of space in the box, and sort of pick up on the loose threads. Something that frustrated me, and it kind of, I guess, picked up last game as well, is we've mentioned about the ref, but the amount of added time. Now, I don't mind it, but do it throughout the season. Do it throughout half the season. Don't do it with two games left.
Neves's comments are spot on, and I'd love to see a response from Howard Webb or PGM, OL, or whatever they're called, in response to his comments, because he's called them out for what they are. Fucking charlatans. Absolute clowns. And you're right, like, no one's got an issue with there being 9 minutes injury time. Like, when the injury time at the World Cup, like, most people saying, you know what, fair fucking play, because that's what they should do. And in turn, it will stop time wasting. I understand time wasting is a part of the game, but also, you know, some of the levels that these teams go to, it's fucking ridiculous, man. And it is one of the dark arts that needs, not completely removing, but it needs to be managed a lot better. But I mean, where did the 9 minutes come from in the first place? I remember too many stoppages, really.
There was 5 minutes when there was a bit of treatment in the second half. That was it. But like, this whole experiment thing passed me by completely. I had no idea this was happening. No one.
Like, that's normally, the point. The point, isn't it? Like, Howard Webb got so much like praise on Monday Night Football, and fair play, because I thought he came across really well, because he explained everything, he showed the process. And why wasn't there the saying before the games this weekend? Okay, so this week we're doing that. I mean, I'm not saying it makes it right, but at least we'd have a clue. So, you know, we're the normal fan, all they want to be do is kept informed about a game they're paying fucking 40 quid a game to watch. Why are we the last to know any of these things? It's fucking joke. It's really annoying.
Yeah, because, I mean, you look at the Premier League Twitter account where they put the little shirts on for the match day preview, so you know who's playing in what. They've got the. I mean, that gets millions of views, that tweet, every week, because there's saddos like me who love that stuff. But the point is, they've got eyes. All they have to do is put a little thing, asterisk at the top. For this weekend, for the next 2 weekends, we will be trialling the World Cup timekeeping exercise. Job done. There you go. No one moans. Whatever. It's still ridiculous that you're doing it for the last two games when there's still things to play. If everything was done and dusted, then whatever, fine. But there's still things on the line. And you can't then go about it and, Lamina got sent off because he was the third man. Well, no, that's not a rule. There's never been a rule. You got sent off because he's black and the referees are racist. And I've said that over and over again, and they're not going to tell me off, are they? Because it's true. That was a shambles, that game. And it's not happened. It didn't happen before, and it hasn't happened since. And it's got worse, if anything else. And no one else has been sanctioned about it, just Lamina and what he was like in that. I mean, everyone saw what Jared Gillett was like in the Monday Night Football thing.
Yeah.
How he spoke to people. He's got ideas above his station. In Australia, he was great. He's the one that they showed with him mic'd up there. He was good. And he's come over here. Billy Big Bollocks again. Stupid. But no one's got a problem with extra time. We lost 2 points because of a goalkeeping error, which we'll come on to that in a bit, because what do people want? Want SAR dropping? For no apparent reason. You get a B-list Championship keeper who has one good game and everyone thinks he's the saviour. Well, then he drops a complete bollock, loses us 2 points, and it was already on the cards with that one that he tried to punch wide. Why? That was straight at him, that went out for a corner earlier in the game. Just not good enough. But timekeeping, if that's what it was, then fine. But no one was told, again.
It just feels bizarre to me that you say, introducing something halfway through the season, I can never quite get my head round.
They're literally just making the rules up as they go along.
Yeah.
And
it screams that there must be something incredibly poisonous within, PGMOL, what FA, in terms of managing that. Because
this is a multi-billion pound product, a multi-billion pound organisation, whatever you want to term it. You know, you'd expect this sort of foolishness in the Wolverhampton Sunday League or the West Midlands Regional League, not the English Premier League. Like, if they can't get their house in order at the highest level, then what hope is there for the rest of the football pyramid? Because it's a joke. It is a joke. Like, they are literally making the rules up as they go along now. And how is that fair? And how is that, you know, as sort of, I'm not even going to say fans, as customers, why should we buy into that product? Makes no sense.
Maybe just did it to gloss over how shit his overall performance was, to be honest. Like, so we're only talking about that and not how incompetent the rest of his performance was, because that was embarrassing enough as it was.
Did any of you notice the foul throws from Everton yesterday?
It's a good boy, yeah.
Who was taking their long throws? Was it like Tarkowski or something?
Hmm.
I think it was their number five. Every time he took a throw, he was jumping. Like, his lead foot was off the floor as he was throwing it. The throwing that led to their goal, Damari Gray is actually standing on the pitch.
That's actually allowed, by the way.
What, stand on the pitch?
As long as that part of... This is one of them weird bylaws that it very rarely comes up, but you don't have to have your feet behind the line. As long as part of your throwing foot is on the line, like with a corner, like the overhang thing,
yeah,
your foot can be on the pitch. You're talking about Mo Kamara at Barnsley levels, where he kind of trapezed himself on. But as long as your foot's touching the line, then your foot can be on the pitch. Again, stupid rules. No one wants, but they're there.
See, Stu, this is why I appreciate you, man. It's mad, though, all them little things. Like, you just know. Every day's a school day around you. Well, okay, right. I'll take back the Damari Gray throw-in, then. They can have that one. But I'm sure I counted at least three or four foul throws from Everton yesterday. And I'm just like, what is this guy doing again? Like, this is elite level refereeing. I understand they're humans. They are going to make mistakes. But when you are that fucking shit, like, we've had some shockers at the Molyneux this season from refs. But that one's got to be up there with one of the worst of the last decade, even. I think we mentioned it at the beginning of the show or just before we come on air. When Neves played the ball off the ref and he gave the ball back to Everton.
Mm-hmm.
When Semedo got clattered and got booked. And I think, I mean, I haven't seen a replay of it or anything, but even like the Traore booking was a bit like, what the fuck's this guy playing at?
It wasn't just yesterday either. Every time we've had him, he's been like this. Yeah. Every single time. And coincidentally, when he's been on VAR for us as well, it's always the same. As soon as I saw his name on last Wednesday when it was announced, you think, well, we know what this is going to be then. It's not playing against 12 men because he was equally as bad for them as he was for us.
Mm.
They're just not fit for purpose. And I think this is why a lot of the Howard Webb stuff on Monday night was welcome. But we also know that that's the fact that that is the best of the best of them clips that I could show, probably without any levels of incompetence at all, and how it still wasn't great, kind of highlights a massive issue there. And yeah, obviously, no one wants to be a ref, because why would you want to put yourself in this position at the young age of like 14, 15 when you start? You ain't going to get a passion to be bawled at unless you've got a bit of a kink. And there ain't that many people around, is there? So, or at least in public eye. So it's just a massive problem that they're incompetent, bent, or both, and they're not held to stupid rules that make no sense. They're made up by people who've never played the game. And then you look at the Anfield one, which as soon as I didn't even know the score there. I had no idea. So when I was watching it on Match of the Day, it was going completely alien to me. But as soon as I saw it, I thought, well, that's going to be offside because of how stupid everything is now. And you look at it, and in no world does that make any sense other than theirs.
Yeah, the amount of money that is floating about the Premier League now, surely they can offer a better referee education package to referees that are climbing the ladder.
Ex-players. Isn't there one getting a lot of publicity at the moment in the chat? Didn't he ref City Raya? I think. I don't know if there's one in is really doing well in the Champions League, a Polish guy, and he's played the game before. I think he plays it like, you know, their championship equivalent in Poland or something like that. And I think, you know, ex-players getting into it, I think, could be something that needs looking at, to be honest. Because, like you say, they played the game, then they know all the tricks of the trade, that, you know, they know what to look for. And obviously you can't have it at the highest, you know, the highest players doing it, because obviously there's going to be bias for certain teams. But, you know, lower down the pyramid, I think there's something in that.
I don't know if there would be bias. I mean, I think they just have to declare. Like, that obviously you wouldn't get Gary Neville like, refereeing Liverpool or Man City, would you? That's, or maybe even Arsenal. But your players at that level wouldn't do it anyway, because why would you? They don't need the money. No. You're looking at like League Two and below, maybe. They might need the money more, and that would make some kind of sense, because if they've still got a job in football, they're getting paid a decent wage for, what, the next 20, 30 years of their life?
Hmm.
And they're going to get a bit more exposure there than they did when they played. So if people wanted to do that, then maybe. But in the short term, you might have to look at going abroad and just bussing these people in, because this doesn't happen. It very rarely happens everywhere else. I mean, I watch a lot of foreign football. Now Gully does as well. And all this stuff that comes out everywhere, oh, it's as bad in Spain. And, well, it's not at all. This level of shitness doesn't happen anywhere else. And you look at the amount of English refs that went to the World Cup, says it all.
Mm.
Because they'd rather get people from countries that no one's even been to, who are still better than the refs in the Premier League.
Yeah. Why don't we get refs from abroad?
Because there's no rule against it.
But, you know, if you had refs from Russia or frigging Belgium or whatever, they're going to be a lot more impartial than the English refs, because, you know, we've all got feelings towards certain teams in this country, because that's sort of, this is the country that we follow the support in. But, you know, I wouldn't go and ref in Holland and feel like, you know what, I'm going to fuck over Herenveen or AZ Alkmaar, because I've got no need to, like, I don't care about them. Whereas, you know, a Congolese ref ain't going to think like, oh, I absolutely hate Crystal Palace to the point where I'm going to start cheating, because I'm adamant that them cheating, these refs, I'm there. It's gone beyond them being shit. They're just cheating.
Yeah, and until they give access to the full trans, not live, because that's not allowed, as he clearly pointed out, which we all know anyway, but the fact that the MLS has got its own referee YouTube channel that goes over all these things and shows all contentious decisions with the audio, and they go over it and they criticise their own. Why? Why not? Well, we know why. We know exactly why not. It's perfectly legal to do under FIFA and all that bollocks, so they can't hide behind that. And like when he said, we want to do more, we'll do more of these things. Well, no, Howard, just give us a YouTube channel and put your fuck-ups on there for everyone to see. But they won't show everything, because we know why. it's as plain as ever this season. When it might be hard for people to believe that we're not complete conspiracy nuts, but when you're bombarded with it over and
the
over
stream,
again,
take off those orange tinted sunglasses right now and say that with a straight face.
You used to believe that it was all above board. Then you look at how dodgy boxing is, how bent athletics has been over the years. You think, well, football, barring a few things in Italy and here in the Grobbelaar and wherever, on the whole, it's pretty clean.
Mm.
But the amount of nonsense that goes on, you think, well, it's not easy. When it's as blatant in your face as some of the stuff that's happened this season, that's been magnified with the VAR stuff, there's no way to argue against it for a lot of it, because it's there.
Not to drag it away from your calling out corrupt refereeing, but within that 8-9 minutes of added time, Everton did score, and Stuart, as you said, it was a bit of a clang from Bentley, wasn't it?
He's not good enough. He's not good. I said he was not good enough anyway. He had one good game, and everyone lauded him. But everything I said last week that it was really convincing how he was claiming the ball to himself, and within a week it's all gone tits up. Like the one that I mentioned where he punched it out for a corner when it was straight at him with both fists, just odd behaviour. Why? Just why? He could have gone anywhere, that ball. And you think, well, okay, you've had a sighter there, you've had one. And he'd started coming for a few things and then going back on his line. I thought, well, yeah, this is why he's a number two in the Championship. And we signed him for the English quota. That's exactly why he's here. Well, yeah, he might be good around the lads in the changing room, but he's not good enough. He's not a Premier League goalkeeper. He's an okay number two backup at best. And within two games, we've seen that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, like you said, he's an okay number two backup, but the concern would be is whoever our number one is next season. Imagine they was injured for, say, 3 or 4 months. Would you want Bentley in goal for potentially 15 games?
You'd have to change the way everything plays because he can't be relied on for things like that. So for someone like that who will come and claim, you've kind of... He showed yesterday that he can't always do it. So his decision-making's not very good.
Yeah.
He's capable to an extent, so you'd have to change everything to keep him in the six-yard box for the majority of the time and not go wandering outside of it, even if he wants to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a weird one with Bentley because, like I said, I mean, I wouldn't say he's shit, but is he better than when we had Ruddy as number two? I don't think so, and I wasn't a Ruddy fan. So you could say we've actually gone backwards in that department now.
I mean, considering how Ruddy's played pretty consistently, I believe.
Player of the year?
Yeah. You know, I know he's been fine for the number one spot, but he's played a good amount of games. He's not gone and been complete backup, you know, Scott Carson levels for Birmingham City. So, as you say, very clearly, he it's a homegrown status. And if, you know, if we have to call on him in cup games and whatever with Bentley, then I sort of think so be it. But conceding a goal in the 98th minute, 97th minute, whatever it kind of pops in, it did just feel so fucking annoying because I don't think Everton massively deserved it.
No. Like what I said, they didn't seem bothered. They looked like they were on the beach as well, to be honest. They didn't seem bothered at all. I mean, I know they put their centre-halves up front. They went full dice and just started lumping up to him. But literally, the last 6 minutes, that was the only time it looked like they actually seemed bothered about scoring, which was just, I found it really bizarre. Their fans were really flat. They started off reasonably vocal and then you didn't hear anything from them from when we scored to when they scored. It was just very, very strange, I thought.
They've got that stupid Ric Flair, woo, song there they're singing on repeat for a little bit and then after they scored, which is all they seem to do now. It used to be like Chelsea just chanting their own name over and over again, which was annoying in itself, but that song has got to be the worst in the entire country. They never shone so brightly. Well, they're just the same as the anti-scouse thing again, but it's pretty obvious the media loving and the whole Everton supporters thing from last year with the welcoming the bus in with the flares and wherever. And to let off a blue flare when you've equalised in the 99th minute away to get a point that they were probably safe with even without it anyway, looking at everyone else down there. But they're terrible fans. They always have been. Goodison's as quiet as anything else. It's quieter than Molyneux has been this season, every time we've gone there, other than that stupid song. But again, they didn't deserve to be happy yesterday, and we gave it them.
Well, speaking of people who weren't happy yesterday, there's, I guess, at least two Wolves players who weren't. And let's talk about Jimenez first, because we know Lopetegui loves a sub. He loves mixing players up. But with a couple of minutes left on the clock, we still had subs left, and he decides to bring on Kuna instead of giving Jimenez, I guess, what has been perceived anyway as a last appearance at Molyneux, of which I think Jimenez threw a bit of a strop from all accounts. and then was very emotional at full time. So Lopetegui's come out afterwards and has said that maybe he could have done more. Maybe, you know, I won't read you out the full quote, but he said you have to be professional as a coach, and after you have to take an emotional decision. So maybe with this situation, maybe I can do a little bit better as a coach. I'm critical of myself, which I don't know. I feel like a lot of the optics, if I know it's like last games of the season, something just about it reminded me of Bruno Lage and Janky Hoover in terms of kind of throwing a player under the bus and losing that. There was a real kind of catalytic moment then. And I think we're lucky, in my opinion, that this has happened at the time of the season it has. And for basically the players who are probably pissed off aren't staying here long term. Because I feel like there could be a bit of a disruption if it isn't going to all go away in six days' time or whatever.
Well, I mean, I think personally, we're a professional football club playing in the Premier League, points on the line. You know, it wasn't a charity game. if the coach feels in that moment that Raul wasn't the right sub to bring on, then everyone has got to respect and accept that. And right, Raul is, it's a really, really sort of tricky topic, because pre-injury, absolutely fantastic. You know, the joy that he brought to us as fans was second to none. But for me, his behaviour and his attitude from Southampton at home, he doesn't deserve it anyway. He doesn't deserve that sort of, yeah, mate, have your 10 minutes. Because let's not forget, this is a guy that refused to play for us when we was in the shit. So that, for me, and I know every fan's different, and there's fans who, you know, he can do no wrong, and that's fine, that's your opinion. We're all entitled to our opinion, but it left a sour taste for me. And I just always think with players, never bigger than the club. And, you know, we come week in, week out, and we support you. You've got to show that little bit of respect back. And what he did, in my opinion, was show the club a massive lack of respect. Absolutely massive. But then he still wants his little 5 minutes of glory when we're trying to win a game. Nah, don't wash for me. And fair play to Lopetegui, because obviously now we've got a coach with some fucking bollocks about him who ain't scared to make big decisions and to show, like, I'm the coach, I'm the manager, you sing to my tune, not the other way around. So that's my opinion on Raul not getting his little 5 minutes to clap everyone.
Yeah, completely agree. And I think where it is different for the Hoover thing, Hoover was thrown under the bus by a manager and he was a child. And yeah, he might be a bit of a bellend, and has been proven when he was sent away, and then they sent him away again. And he seems to have been getting sent to Stoke's going to do something to a person, ain't you? You're sink, or you realise, I don't really want to be in Stoke. Please sort myself out and going to get back. And look what he's done. He's done well at Stoke. So I presume he comes back in the summer with a fresh slate, and we'll see. But with this, like you said, he came on against Man United last week and he was fucking awful. He did nothing at all. He did nothing at all. He looked less fit than players who played an hour, and he just came on the pitch. He swanned around. He didn't do anything. You think, well, okay, you clearly know you're going. Whatever, fine. But he didn't deserve to play. And like you said, it's not a charity. And when each league position's worth £3 million, is it worth £3 million throwing a game so Raul can have a standing ovation? No. It's not worth that for anyone. If that was Neves in the same situation and he'd been out of the team, It's now. You had it. He had it at the end. He had it at the end anyway. So, yeah, from his point of view, yeah, fine. What he did, throwing his jacket down in frustration, completely understand. There's nothing wrong with that. But there's also nothing wrong with your manager realising you're shit now, through no fault of your own, like we've said over and over again.
Yeah.
That he's a different person as well as a different player. And you can see that in how he's behaved. And obviously it's a head injury. This happens. It's unfortunate. But again, the club supported him more than anything in the entire world. The fans did. The banner that people funded.
Mm.
Everything's been done to support him. We gave him a whole year last year, and he's never got back to the same rate. And then he turns up like everyone else did under Dr. Death, completely unfit. And from that point of view, I don't blame him for being, when he was misdiagnosed. Again, I understand him being pissed off and not wanting to be around a bloke who's now been struck off from the club, not medically. Well, that's inevitable, really. But I don't blame that whole situation. I don't blame him for getting out of somewhere where a supposed doctor is telling him one thing, which is false, to go into someone who he trusts in the international setup. I don't blame him for that either. It's just a terrible situation all round. Lopetegui did the right thing for me. It's not a charity. If we'd 4-0 up with 5 minutes left, fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was 1-0 because we'd yet again spurned a load of chances. And Cunha, for all his goal-scoring faults, is better option than Raul in 2023. It's just the way it is. It's unfortunate and it's sad for everyone involved, but it was the right thing to do.
In that 5 minutes, what happens? He gets clapped onto the pitch and he runs around for 5 minutes, and what, we cheer when he gets the ball or what? I don't know what that 5 minutes has got any real relevance. He gets to run around on the pitch for 5 minutes. I don't know. Like you said, he got all that at the end. And and he didn't learn what he thought.
I didn't realise it. The volume was going to play on that. Sorry, Tom.
No, that's right. I was going to say that. And he deserved that for everything he did pre-injury. I try and separate Raul almost like it's completely two different people and players now. Pre-injury Raul and post-injury Raul. Post-injury Raul, you can just forget about. Pre-injury Raul was an absolute hero. And he got what he deserved. You know, all that he got yesterday, complete deserve for what he did pre-injury. So that's the more important bit, no? Like that's the bit that matters, not the 5 minutes where he's just running around and chasing the ball, probably aimlessly, or not chasing the ball, as the last like 18 months has proven. So he got what he deserved, which was a great ovation from the fans at the end of the game, which is fair enough.
I think Moutinho was a strange one though, not him not being in the squad, but even though he wasn't in the squad, like you'd think maybe you'd still come and support your teammates and come and see the fans at the end of the game.
That feels even weirder for me, to be honest. And again, it feels like he's thrown a bit of a wobbly for me. But Lopetegui said he is one of the players that I was thinking to play today because he has worked well. But it's not about my choices. It is about his will. And I have to respect his situation. And in my head, Moutinho is the pro's pro. He is the consummate professional, conducts himself immaculately on the pitch. You see him in training, he's a fierce competitor, doesn't have a temper, doesn't make rash decisions, but seems to have decided to not want any of that. Almost, I think, for me, it's almost like the opposite of Raul. Raul wanted that 5 minutes of everyone look at me, I want that moment on the pitch during the game. And I kind of think Moutinho is the opposite. And so it's gone, well, hang on, if I'm not starting, I don't want to be just brought on the bench to be wheeled out as some sort of, you say, charity case. I want to be there because I've earned it. And as I say, like, you've almost got these two situations which are the same, but completely different at the same time, which I guess my sort of thing about Lopetegui is I don't think he's actually kind of got it wrong, because I think he's treated everyone the same in a way, in terms of sort of, it could have been really easy if you say in the 88th minute, he brings on him. In the 89th minute, he brings on Moutinho. In the 90th, he brings on Johnny and whatever. Because Johnny just wasn't in the squad. And I mean, I know his future's less certain than those others, where, you know, you look at the reaction of him as he's in floods of tears at the end. It kind of did just feel like that's a goodbye, even though he's got a year left on his contract. It's the same as Johnny. And I don't know. I find Moutinho's reaction to it very funny. And as you know, put on a Fancast Twitter account, at Wolves Fancast, if you're not already following, it might regret him. It might be a regret for him. You know, he has been, frankly, one of the best players to wear a Wolves shirt in the history of the club. And he didn't get that opportunity during the game, or afterwards as well. And it might not necessarily have a significance for him, but I don't know. It's still a strange one.
Yeah. Until we know the full extent of it. I mean, the fact that he said, respect his situation, I mean, it might be a second language thing, so when he's saying his will and his situation, does that mean he just didn't want to be there? Or did there's something happened? And he, like, it sounds... It doesn't sound as bad to me as it does to, like, some people have come up with all kinds of weird and wacky theories and whatever. Jaffer's nice comment there. But yeah, it's a weird one. Until we know for sure exactly why he didn't want to be there, I'm kind of benefit of the doubt. For everything that he's done for the last few years, and ever since he's been here, he's been a consummate professional. He's never moaned, he's never done anything. It's so completely out of character that it's like, well, something's clearly happened, but why would this happen now? Because it hasn't happened before. And at his age, like you're saying, he might just not have wanted the pity vote, and he might have just said, okay, I'd rather not.
Because do you remember, do you remember John Terry's when he was at Chelsea? And it was at the point where he was genuinely dog shite in his last season. And it was against Sunderland. And he told, I don't know if it was him directly or Chelsea in general, told Jordan Pickford, when they'd already been relegated, to kick the ball out of play in the 26th minute.
Yeah.
So they could applaud him off. And I don't know, if that's your yardstick, Jimenez seems to have been, let's say, eager to go down that path, whereas Moutinho is very much of a, you know, that's just horrendous behaviour.
Yeah. No, if that is the reason, then it's weird, but I can understand it. If he has thrown a wobbly like Bolly did and refused to play, and he just didn't want to be involved for whatever reason because he thinks he can stay for another year, then you can kind of say, yeah, that's pretty piss poor form. But we don't know that yet. And I doubt that that's what it is.
But I think the difference between Moutinho and Jimenez, for you, Stu, by the sounds of it, is Moutinho's still got stock in the bank in terms of, actually, you know what? If he has thrown a tantrum, however you want to describe it, where he's gone, I don't want to be part of this end of season stuff. He's never done anything to put you in, you know, any disregard as a fan.
Mm.
Whereas, and it's the most devastating thing about Jimenez, isn't it, that he was firstly this genuinely brilliant player. Top 10 striker in the Premier League, one of the best strikers to ever play for Wolves. Then, obviously, injury, and it's like, just literally everything in the last 12 months. I could get over the two sending offs from last season. You know, the fucking stupid one against Man City and the bewildering one against Leeds. And we can't let it slide. And how many footballers have a year where they're playing and just don't have any pressure, per se, in terms of delivering and stuff like that? But then kind of everything that's gone on this season has seemingly tarnished a bit of his reputation for with Wolves fans, which is that I find it an interesting kind of marry up in terms of, you know, those two players in similar situations.
So it is sad. It's sad if that's the case with Matini. I don't understand why he wouldn't watch the team play. Watch Neves's last game at home. You know, watch him get the ovation that he deserved. You know, the guy he's been playing centre mid next to his, you know, his sort of prodigy for the last, you know, sort of five years or so. Same with Johnny and Neto as well. They've chosen not to watch the team that they get paid by and the players that they play with week in, week out play. It's a bit sad, really. But again, let's not jump to conclusions with it. Let's see what comes out first. But genuine legend. It's a shame. It's just, you know, we've not been able to give him the praise and adulation that he deserves.
This is where they both score against Arsenal next week, isn't it?
That's it. Him and his hat trick incoming.
Yeah, can't wait. Lastly, we do have Ruben Neves as well, who, again, a fairly emotional lap of honour. You know, I thought it sounded very cynical before, and I meant it when it felt similar to last season when he got really emotional before after the game. And whereas this time, it was emotional. It almost felt like a level of accepting. And he said to press afterwards, "I want to be here, but I never hide the fact that I want to play Champions League football. It's a hard decision. Me and my family love it here, but in football, you have to go for your main goals. Nothing's happened yet. If it was my last game, I really enjoyed it, and I'm very thankful for the past six seasons," which I think is just a really textbook answer. And I don't think any Wolves player begrudges Neves when he moves.
No, I think, you know what? I think we've got to be grateful that we have had six seasons out of him.
Yeah.
You know, we've done really well to get six seasons out of him, six good, potentially six of his best footballing seasons out of him as well. Mm. Obviously, you know, he might go and absolutely smash it. We don't know yet. But I don't know. A part of me, I don't know why, but I've just got a feeling he's going to stay. I don't know. I've got nothing, no indication as to why I feel that way. But I just think he's going to stay. He ain't going to Barcelona because they ain't got a fucking pot to piss in. What they're offering now to send us about 35 of their squad players for Neves. Like, that ain't going to happen. I think the best move for him personally would be Man United.
Yeah.
I just think he really transforms their midfield. Yeah, and obviously. He gets Champions League football. Yeah. You know, regardless of what you think about Man United, I can't stand them, but they're a massive club. You know, still one of the biggest clubs in the world. Gets to play in a massive stadium week in, week out. Gets his Champions League football. And he would be the main man in their midfield. And so I think that's the move that makes most sense. But I don't know. I think he's going to stay.
I think it's the other United. I think if anyone, it'll be Newcastle for the reason that if they can wank off 40 million for Anthony Gordon, and how that bloke has got a career, God knows. they beat Leicester tomorrow. It's all guaranteed. Ain't Champions League football for them. So I think it is guaranteed. It wouldn't surprise me. Their midfield, they haven't really got much depth there. Obviously, they've got Jolinton playing there, but their first team is great. Below that, it's not. And you think someone building a team around him in the Champions League. I mean, the fact that he said Champions League and not European football, that rules out West Ham if they win that and they're in Europa League as a replacement for Rice.
Rules out Spurs.
Rules out Spurs. Well, Spurs might rule themselves out at this rate. he ain't going to go to Villa to play against some farmers in Austria or wherever in the Conference League. So there ain't a lot of options left, and no one's going to pay the money that we're going to ask for him elsewhere in Europe. So like Lou said, I wouldn't be surprised if it comes September he's still here. And if he is, he'll sign a new deal.
Like, well, I was going to say that'll be my follow up then. Is if you think he's likely not to go, whether it's through Wolves' demands or lack of interest, do you see him sign the new contracts, even if it's
a contract? 150 grand a week, club captain. We get 10 or 12 years out of him. He retires here. He never gets to play Champions League football, but he gets to become a legend in Wolverhampton. You know what I mean? I know what I'd pick. But no, I would. I would. I'd just give him... I mean, what's he on now?
About 80, I think.
80. I mean, if Jimenez and Martino, highest earners, 100 grand a week, I'd break the structure for him, 120, 130, give him the armband, club captain, and I feel weird saying this because then you'd have to build the team around him, but we actually look like we play better football when he's not playing. So it's, yeah, but that's what I'd do. New 4 or 5 year deal, bump up his wages, and then we bump up his transfer value as well.
Well, that's my thinking, is that even if he signed, let's say, a 3 year deal in the summer, but, you know, he's essentially on a 4 year contract, isn't he, at that point. That's almost just enough to, it's enough to keep him to stay and to increase his value, but not too much that a club might not come sniffing. You say, and if they don't, then I don't think money is the overriding factor for Ruben Neves. You say, actually, he seems to be someone who's still very much committed on his goal aspirations in terms of playing European Champions League football, but at least, you know, hey, if he has to stay at Wolves for another season, at least he's earning another 50 grand a week on top of what he's already earning.
Yeah, you could even put a caveat in there, like saying, okay, you'll have this 4 or 5 year deal, but everyone knows the Champions League thing is what you want, and by signing this deal, you guarantee us, I don't know, a minimum, like a release clause of 35. Yeah, it might seem low, but it's better than nothing in 12 months, something like that.
A bit like Grealish had.
Yeah. But that was obviously 100 million. But yeah, similar kind of thing, like a kind of a formal gentleman's agreement, like we had with Lescott when he signed and then we sold him off. Similar kind of thing.
Or with Say George Olifinyana. I don't know why I decided to name drop him. I just like saying the name.
Get him on.
I know you're going to wrap up in a minute, Rich, but sorry, can we just have 2 minutes to talk about how shit Collins was yesterday? We can't go an hour and 12 minutes without saying that. Sorry, I'm only going to wrap up, but Jesus Christ.
Imagine, what did Dan call him? Right-footed Berra?
Mate, it was worse. I've defended him all season, but honestly, it looked like a competition winner yesterday. He'd look out of place at the fucking charity game on Friday, he would.
Do you know what did it for me? Was it the first half? Yeah, it was attacking the centre-back. First half, big ball come from out of the sky.
Yeah.
And they both just stood there and watched it bounce.
Yeah. I know. I couldn't believe it. Sorry, I had to say that.
There was another one.
That's been brewing inside you, ain't it?
When do I bring it up?
I was going to say, I've managed to make it for a whole episode without praising João Gomez, which I feel like I should. Not least of all for Carl getting his shirt torn and stuff like that. I just love the bloke.
Well, sorry, but just go back on Collins. What the fuck do we do with him next season?
Well, Jufo's got a good shout in the comments. Make a wish. No, and to be fair, we've got a slightly more sensible one, which is needs alone 40 games to sign off his team so he can get out all his mistakes.
I think he's probably better as a... Not Berger. He's probably better as a right back at this moment in time, just because any of his nonsense is not gonna be capitalised on as much. So I mean, he's played there before and he did pretty well, and he's got the capability to play there. But it's his decision making from out of nowhere. From you look from August September before he went high karate on Grealish. He was fine. There was no problem with him. He was sound.
Yeah.
But ever since then, he's like he's completely lost his head. And now there was a couple of times yesterday where he went to step up, and like almost like what Kilman did last week. He's in the back of his mind that he didn't want to get caught, and then he stepped back. But then by stepping back, the ball went through, and it happened. It happened more than once. And you think, well, what are you doing? Like the Collins that we signed wouldn't have done this. And he just it's almost like he needs it drilled into his head what he actually is, and not what he thinks he can be or what he's turned into. Because we ain't getting any money back from that at all. If anyone wanted to sell him,
how much did we sign him for?
20
million would pay for him.
Yeah.
Paid off the homeless debt.
Yeah, I'm not. It's weird actually. I said to my mate, "Yes, I'm not actually that." I wouldn't say I was happy that he played that bad, but it is. I think it's actually a good thing. Same with Pudence. I think it's probably good that they played shit because now that we know. Now, Lopetegui knows, Jeff Shee knows, and the fans know they are nowhere near good enough for next season, and they need to be shot, get shot off, or you know, loaned out, or
they need to be shot.
Got shot off. But yeah, I think it's not the worst. Same with Bentley, it's not the worst thing because now it's clear to everyone that they need replacing, and they can't be starting games for us next season.
Better to see now than. The 5th of September next season when the transfer window
exactly 100%.
And they're still 100%. Playing
1000%. Well, I was gonna say, time will tell on Collins, I think, but gonna be an interesting one, I think, long term because it was such a big investment. But you know, we spent the same amount on Patrick Cotrone, which, yeah, how little we knew.
It has got to be mentioned, he's only 22 as well. And the amount of football he's played at that young age, he's got more than enough time to learn and to pack it all in. But the amount of mistakes yesterday was more than the rest of the season combined.
Yeah, I don't want to be harsh on the bloke, but I can't remember a defender we've had in recent years who's been so error-ridden.
Vallejo levels of yours.
Yeah, you know, they just need to sort of be such a mark of improvement. But that seems a good point as any to end the show. But before we do, make sure you check out our charity football match stuff that's happening very, very soon. A week on Friday, on the 2nd of June, we're playing Upload United, which is a select 11 of other content creators from from podcasts to vlogs to YouTube channels as well. So it's all to raise money for Mind. If you click the link in the description, feel free to donate. So yeah, really good cause. Make sure you go check it out if you can do. We will be back later this week for the last preview show of the season. Shock. Which it feels bonkers, to be honest, that we've said, you know, when we talked about Hwang earlier and you know, stuff against Newcastle, I kind of can't quite comprehend that's in the same season as this one right now. So yeah, one more game to go, guys, but we will of course be here to preview it, and we'll be here to talk about it afterwards and any of the other ongoings around Molyneux. Big shouts out to 90 Min, and also make sure you keep up to date with all things Wolves Fancast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Wolves Fancast. Until next time, though, it's goodbye from Tom.
See you guys.
It's goodbye from Luke.
See you later.
And it's goodbye from Stu.
Bye, everyone.
See you next time.